Commission, Design Review Commission. Good afternoon to everybody and thank you for attending. Please note that the commission hearing room at 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, room 2500B is closed due to the public due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And the Portland City Code and State Law, the Design Review Commission is holding its meeting electronically. All members of the commission are attending remotely by video and a teleconference. Through required public notice, the public is invited to also participate remotely and can provide testimony during today's hearing. Commission is taking these steps as a result of the COVID pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote social distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. Please now, city staff, please introduce yourself, starting with Laura, and then please pass it along.
Laura Duvall, hearings clerk. Brian?
Brian Tierney, hearings clerk. Art?
Art Graves, staff for this project. Tim?
Tim Heron, Bureau of Development Services, commission liaison.
Great, and I think that's all the staff that is available today. So I will start with Sari on the commissioner side.
Sari Santner, Design Commission. I go to Chandra.
Chandra Robinson, Design Commission. Don?
Don Vallister, Design Commissioner. I go to Jessica.
Jessica Molinar, Design Commission.
And then that leaves me, so Sam Rodriguez, I'll be chairing a design commissioner and I'll be chairing the hearing today. So with that, let me go, you're gonna have to be a little patient with me. Let me open up the next page, which is the design commission type 3 procedure. So Tim, I will read this, right?
Correct.
Right. So design review commission type 3 procedure. This is, and I'll preface by saying this is an unusual review just because it is a remand from an appeal to city council. So it was remanded back to the design review commission, which is an unusual process. The design review commission type 3 procedure. Public testimony can only address the applicable approval criteria or other criteria in the comprehensive plan or land use regulations which the person believes apply to the decision. The applicable approval criteria are set forth in the Portland Zoning Code and are more specially identified in the staff report. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issues precludes appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals, LUBA, based on that issue. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to give the commission an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes the action for damages in circuit court under ORS 197.796. This hearing is recorded and all speakers need to sit at the front table, or sit in front of your computer and give their names and mailing addresses before they speak. The following procedures will be used for each. That's what it is. So the Design Review Commission hearing procedure for this hearing in particular will be as follows. The process as I mentioned before, it's an atypical process that the Type 3 design review was appealed to City Council and City Council chose to remand it back to the Design Review Commission. Today is the first hearing of two with the Design Commission to prepare a commission recommendation to City Council. We'll further explain the process thus far and next steps. That's around 5 minutes. Then we'll give the appellant 20 minutes to present their testimony. Supporters of the appellant will then have 3 minutes each, 5 minutes if it's a representative of the neighborhood association. Applicant will present their report around 20 minutes maximum. Supporters of the applicant of the project will have 3 minutes each. Again, if this neighborhood association will have 5 minutes. And then appellant rebuttal will have 5 minutes for that. And then there we will close public testimony, and then commission members will have a discussion and provide comments to the applicants to consider as they prepare. Is that right? Yes.
As they prepare. Right. You'll comment back to staff.
So it's really for staff to prepare findings. Right. Okay. So with that, I will read what is now. I need to find the number. Hold on a second. Give me a second here. I need to find, where did I have the, I've got so many open things, you guys. Just give me a little patience with me today. Okay, here we are. So today we'll be hearing LU 19-145-295-DZM. And with that, I will ask all commissioners whether they have had any ex parte communication and or any bias to declare. So can the commissioners please each
give me- I have no conflict or to declare on this project.
Great.
Same.
Nor I. Nor do I.
I think Jessica.
Nor do I.
And nor do I. So with that, I will give the floor to Art to start with his presentation.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Great. So Art Graves with the BDS. You should be able to see a timeline of the project. I'm just going to use this as kind of a placeholder for a second. So just to acknowledge what Commissioner Rodriguez said, this is an appeal hearing. The process trajectory is fairly unique. The project was approved by the Design Commission in January 2020 and appealed to the City Council shortly thereafter in February 2020, and then remanded back to the Design Commission for expert advice prior to going back in front of the City Council for a vote in December of 2020, so coming up. The procedural history kind of shows you, it doesn't include DARs, but it does take you through from when it was initially submitted. The kind of middle large pink is essentially the appeal period. That's where we are now, way at the bottom. So after this left you, it was appealed. The appeal, there were some notice hiccups, both because of COVID and because of clarification regarding who the appellant was. It went before City Council first in August 20th. At the conclusion of that, it was the applicant requested that it be kept on the record, and there was a 777 for new evidence, response to the evidence, and then a final statement. It came back to City Council on September 16th. And within that, there was discussion about the project, but the applicant had suggested or offered that rather than denial, a remand be entertained. And so that's kind of where we are now. The City Council liked that idea and had some comments regarding the project, and I'll kind of speak to those in a second, but sent it back to you kind of in this new remand format. And again, we don't really have a clear roadmap for this. We don't have a history for this. And this kind of shows you where it's headed from here. It'll come back before you again on November 12th. So any comments that you're saying today need to be, you know, extremely clear. And so the applicant can respond and get revised drawings. And then ultimately, this will go back before City Council for a vote on December 10th. So just a few other things on that. Just to clarify, well, the Design Commission has already decided that this middle met the guidelines. City Council, who is the ultimate decision maker in this appeal, and in their authority, didn't agree. No, if the council saw a majority vote of approval, they would have taken a vote to approve it. It was the applicant that requested, if council was on a path of denial, that they would prefer to remand. The majority of the council took the applicant on this request to remand instead of denying, and acknowledged the Design Commission is better equipped to suggest specific design revisions. The remand's intended for the Design Commission to suggest ways the project can be revised to address council's council area's concerns. To this, however, the council did not have specific design revisions to suggest that would address these concerns, but they broadly spoke of three areas. So broadly, that was context, pedestrian realm, and then the last area was essentially sculpting and setbacks. And they were essentially saying that these areas needed further review. Also, the Design Commission isn't limited into reviewing only the changes proposed by the applicant. So just keep in mind, rather than Design Commission can come up with additional ideas, and if specific enough, the applicant can return with revised drawings that show the requested changes. So, excuse me. Again, broadly speaking, there were the three areas of context, pedestrian realm, and then setbacks and sculpting. The applicant will go into more detail on that, and there is a lot of overlap in what they addressed, and that there, it's not just necessarily addressing one issue, but a lot of the changes are addressing kind of multiple issues. So broadly speaking, regarding context, there were greater setbacks proposed, both at the base and the upper floors. Regarding pedestrian realm, again, setbacks at the pedestrian realm to create more area outside of the building for on the west elevation for the cafe. Also, the canopy projections were increased. And then the sculpting and setbacks, again, that was done on both the north and the west elevations. The north elevation at the ground floor, as well as the upper two kind of masses. And then on the west elevation on the upper two masses. So, and again, the applicant will go into more detail with their submitted drawings. So with that, if you have any questions.
Any questions for Art?
No, not from me.
Okay, seems like we don't have any questions. So according to the schedule, then the next next will be the appellant for 20 minutes, right?
Right, that you're right. And that would be Carrie Richter.
Carrie. Okay, so Carrie, if you want to unmute yourself and then Laura, if you could start the clock. I don't know what kind of clock we have these days, but whenever you're ready, Carrie.
Thank you. Can you hear me? I haven't had a chance to test this.
Yeah, we can hear
sound
you.
Good.
Yes.
Great. My name for the record is Carrie Richter. I'm the attorney representing Pearl District Neighbors for Integrity of Design. And I've got to say this order is a little strange because the applicant hasn't proposed their modifications yet. So I'm going to assume you have seen them because my comments are going to be in reference to them. I also want to ask the commission respectfully whether or not you all have received the materials that I submitted this morning, as well as had an opportunity to review the record before the City Council and watch the hearing, the September 16th hearing. I would like you to affirmatively state one way or the other on the record whether that's the case before the hearing closes, because I think that's really important that you hear exactly what the City Council found.
So if you want me to interrupt a minute, then can we do that right now to get that out of the way?
That would be fantastic.
Okay, so if commissioners would please unmute yourselves and declare whether you have seen or not the hearing in front of city council, as well as whether you have received and reviewed the material submitted by Kerry's office, Kerry and Kerry's office this morning. So Zeri, we'll start with you. You're on my left, so.
Yes, I have listened to the proceedings in city council and I have read the material, yes.
Chandra?
Yes, I as well have listened to the city or watched the city council recordings and reviewed the materials.
Don?
Yeah, I listened to the city council hearing, but I have not seen or reviewed the material. I'm not sure when that was submitted, but I had various meetings this morning and I probably have missed it, so.
Jessica?
I've read all of the material, including the materials we received this morning, and some of the material which included the commissioner. It was almost a text version of what Commissioner Fritz, I believe, spoke about during the commission hearing, but I did not get a chance to watch the actual proceeding.
And I guess I'm the last one. So I have done both.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we will start your testimony, Kerry.
Thank you. I'm going to spend about 10 minutes presenting some of the issues that are raised in my letter. I can't respond to the issues the applicant's going to raise because they haven't done it yet, but I just want to give you a short summary and then reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. I want to start out with the notion that I think the city council was driven largely by the idea that this is a precedent-setting design. And it's precedent-setting because it's the first development to take advantage of the Central City 2035 entitlements. So there's sort of, city council acknowledged that this is sort of charting a new course. This is an extremely small site. That there's a lot of program happening here, and I think that caused the city council a fair amount of heartache. And the sort of three themes that I think rose to the surface from what the council said related in sort of, I'm going to talk about three baskets of issues. The first one has to do with Pearl District character, the unique nature of the site. Commissioner Fritz's comment that this building could go anywhere. It doesn't speak to the Pearl District specifically. And the applicant has responded to that issue by providing additional sculpting, noting that they have pushed the building back at the middle and the top to give some additional relief, and that accentuates the tripartite design. And I'm not going to dispute that the guidelines do talk about tripartite design being a feature of the Pearl District. My concern is that the applicant hasn't studied what is the appropriate tripartite design proportions. What kind of, how does the tripartite design read from the 13th Avenue Historic District, which was the area of particular concern with regard to character? And I'm not convinced that this particular design reflects the type of traditional cornice lines that the guideline is intended to reflect. I can appreciate that perhaps the invisibility, that the being invisible kind of makes them disappear more than a heavy cornice, traditional cornice line might, but I think that there needs to be further study of that question of proportionality and character of the district to determine this. And I don't think that this application that provides only a survey of materials addresses the shaping and the tripartite design elements that the applicant has proposed. The second basket of issues that I want to talk about is this idea of street trees, amenities for the public, and this pushback along the base in the window bays by an additional 2 feet that the applicant has proposed to respond to this concern that there isn't enough public space on the ground floor. Commissioner Fritz talked about that ground floor feeling very private. She also talked about the original 3 foot 6 inch setback not being enough space for kid tables, so the tables would spill out onto the street. I would acknowledge that the 5 foot six does give room for the tables, but what I'm arguing is that that still does not do anything for the public. And you all may recall that when you reviewed this before, I believe it was Commissioner Ballister who expressed reluctance about the loss of the street trees and that there couldn't be street trees. And commissioners, the council shared that concern. There are very few street trees. There is one on Northwest 12th. There are no benches. There is no bicycle parking. So there is no public places for people to stop and rest, which is what the guidelines call for. The other thing I put in my letter that I think is an interesting rule of thumb, the applicant talks about the Canopy Hotel having these really deep setbacks in their bays, and that the Canopy Hotel is a good guide for how they model this setback of 5 feet, 6 inches. They have not done any sort of setback study of what an appropriate setback would be in the Pearl District. What would be appropriate for new construction? The Canopy Hotel setbacks are 6 feet, bay setbacks are 6 feet. And that building is 12 stories high. This building setback, the setback bays are 5 feet, 6 inches, and this building is 250 feet high. If we were to use the same ratio of setback to height that is at issue in the Canopy, the result would be that the setbacks for this particular building would need to be 11 feet, 6 inches. If we're using the Canopy as a proportional guide. So again, I think that this is, proposing 5 feet, 6 inches is a shot in the dark. It doesn't mean anything. There's nothing to analyze from. The final basket of issues that were of concern to the City Council, and here the applicant does not even attempt to address it, is this idea of traffic flow and the amount of demands and for services that this particular design places on the right of way. And the applicant's response here is that this is not within the Design Commission's jurisdiction. They can't take it on. But traffic here is the effect, right? Traffic is the effect of design choices, building height, unit numbers, access, location, size, the number of loading bays, the location of the loading bays, the pedestrian act or the residential access being adjacent to the loading bays. Those are all design choices that are in conflict here. And so that is all germane to the Design Commission's review. The applicant has proposed a building that compromises the pedestrian realm because there's not enough room to accommodate 160 hotel rooms, 113 dwelling units, a publicly available event space on the 21st floor that wasn't mentioned in the appeal hearing. All of this results in a flow of people, a flow of bicycles, and the services in the terms of cars that these limited street frontage can't accommodate. And the council was very concerned about that, and the applicant has not really responded to those issues. The applicant here has proposed to move the hotel entry. Well, the hotel entry isn't the problem. It's the location of the residential entry adjacent to a loading bay that's only two vehicles wide, and won't accommodate all of the temporary delivery that the council found would be, that it would be reasonable to expect. You know, the council talked about Uber deliveries and FedEx deliveries and food deliveries and grocery deliveries. And one of the things I thought that Commissioner Fritz raised that was very interesting is this idea of accessibility. And we need to be designing buildings that are accessible to everybody. And people who are mobility challenged won't move into this building. They won't move into this building because the hallways are so narrow. They won't move into this building because the street is going to feel so congested. And they won't move into this building because they won't feel able to receive the kind of services that they could get at a different building that has a greater deal of frontage. So those are the issues that I raised in my letter. I urge you to deny this application and at the very least have a really serious conversation about what it's going to take to make a marquee design that sets the bar high for the Pearl District and for Central City 2035. And I look forward to being part of that conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. I think the next step we're going to take is we are going to allow for testimony of proponents of the appellant. So with that, let me get my list. Laura, am I to assume that there's one, two, three. So Carrie, you already went. So that you were on this list, and then one, two, three, four. There's five people. Three are against, and two are not. Haven't said what they are. David Dysart and Denise Green are not declaring whether they're pro or against. So I'm not sure what to do with that. So with that, I'm gonna ask you to bring Patricia Cliff and Carl von Friedlin to testify. Then we'll have Rita Silen. And Tim, I'm not sure where I know David is chairs the name of the association, so I'm not sure where he fits into the.
Why don't we, Sam, if I can make a quick suggestion, why don't we hear the people here to testify that are clearly against? Okay. And then maybe we'll take a moment there and we could just simply ask David and Denise which side of not applicable they want to be on in terms of the order.
So I guess it'll be Patricia, Clark, and Rita will in that order.
Cool. And they'll have 3 minutes each.
Okay, 3 minutes each. That's right. Patricia, you have the floor. I think you're in. Yes, you are. I think you're muted. So Patricia is in the meeting room, but is muted, so we can't hear her right now.
I'm asking her to unmute.
There I am. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're a huge echo, Patricia.
Can I be heard?
Patricia, you must have two devices on. You're creating an echo in the webinar. Can you maybe turn off one and just have your audio?
Turn this off. Here, wait a second.
No worries. Take your time.
Is that better?
No. There must be. You're basically broadcasting.
I have to leave the meeting.
Why don't we do this?
Let's start with Rita, and we'll definitely get to Patricia.
Exactly. That's what I was going to suggest. So, Rita, you have the floor.
Thank you, Commissioner Rodriguez. Out of respect for time and content, I would like to cede my minutes to Denise Green, who may not have registered opposition as her position, but.
So Denise, I see you're unmuted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Great, all right.
So you will have 6 minutes.
Okay, and Rita, I think you will have a little time. So, hello, my name is Denise Green, and I live at 403 Northwest 12th Avenue, Unit 403, and I am speaking today in favor of upholding the appeal. I first want to thank the Design Commission for allowing me time to express my thoughts today, and I hope it will be helpful in understanding how a resident that lives in the area feels about the current design. I also want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her letter to the Design Commission addressing her many concerns with the building design. Her letter was sent before the latest plans were released on October 9th. However, her concerns are still not adequately addressed in the design. The developer states that 1 and 2 foot changes in setbacks, one level sculpting changes, and adding 2 feet to the sidewalks and larger canopies will, in their words, create a further perceptible reduction in building mass. The intended effect of the move is to visually reduce apparent height and the actual massing bulk of the building, and that the changes make the building better by pushing the facades back and make a clear and perceptible change by reducing apparent height. If a review of the approved design that was remanded back to the Design Commission and the new preferred scheme shown on illustrations C20, 26, and 23 really offer no apparent change. An apparent change would be clearly visible, understood, and obvious to someone at the street level. A clear change would be a sharp discernment. Not even the developer's drawings provide a sharp discernment, much less to the cities of Portland walking or biking in the neighborhood. The developers have chosen to put the largest building allowed on this 10,000 foot site, and there is no amount of lipstick or 1 foot changes that can make this 23 story monolith seem to visually reduce in size and bulk to a person in the neighborhood. I would also like to address another elephant in the room, and that's the seeming lack of concern to transportation and safety issues proposed by the project. The developer continues not to address these very important concerns as noted by our attorney, Carrie, before. The developer initially proposed this project without doing its homework regarding the Flanders Greenway, a plan that was over 10 years in design prior to the start of this design of this project. This bikeway is a critical aspect of the city's connectivity plans for our Portland cycling community. Our cycling community will finally have the new bridge at 405 built in November, only to get the news that, sorry, it appears that the Design Commission and City have approved a huge project that will severely impact an important part of the path approaching the 405 bridge. Also, cyclists, pedestrians, and local businesses will be faced with many years of closures for staging while the project is being built. As an individual that does not own a car in Portland, I know it's hard to believe, I have very strong concerns about how I will safely navigate the 12th Avenue block and surrounding areas that I live on, much less navigate with my mother who's confined to a wheelchair when she's visiting me, or my niece that's in a stroller at this time. But it's apparent that these matters are not important to the developer. I hope that these concerns do not fall on deaf ears today because they are very important to me and others in our community. Finally, the Design Commission has within its purview to not approve the project. The fact that the building can be built under the 2035 code does not mean it must approve a building that the developers and architects are constantly trying to visually reduce its apparent height and the actual massing bulk of the building. Portland does not need a permanent reminder of a very bad design idea for the first building out of the gate with 2035. Once again, I appreciate your time today and look forward to your comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Laura, I don't see Carl in the room. Is he in the room?
I didn't see him show up yet.
Okay, so since he hasn't showed up yet, why don't we go to David? And David, you have 5-6 minutes. Since if you need an extra minute, that's fine. So go ahead, David.
Well, hello. Thank you very much, David Dysert, 323 Northwest 13th, Vice President and Co-Chair of the Planning and Transportation Committee of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association. Good afternoon. It's good to see you all. Thanks for the time. First, I want to thank the commissioners for your professionalism and your contribution to our city. You have all volunteered your time, and it's a thankless job, and you're appreciated. I also want to thank all the folks at BDS who work hard behind the scenes every day to make our city better. We appreciate you and respect your professionalism. This is an art and practice of the balance of goals and interests, and we appreciate how difficult that can be. So thank you. So we had time just a couple days ago to review. There's a robust public record of our testimony and our letters. We did have some challenges with this project. We were not able to support it in the end. However, we did feel strongly that we were able to work with the design team and you to achieve a better design if this thing does get built. So we've got a few areas here we can talk about. The sculpting of the mass. So the committee appreciates the effort to provide additional sculpting consistent with our previous letters and testimony. The proposed additional setbacks of the lower and upper facades and lowering of the north and west articulations help to achieve a more elegant form and greater relief to the public realm from the sheer mass and height. We would like to see more effort in this area to provide even more relief and separation of the visual forms. A more elegant and sculpted form would help mitigate the introduction of the new code, allowing greater heights and unlimited FAR transfer, setting a new precedent. In terms of the public realm, the committee supports the additional setbacks of the ground floor on Flanders to provide more room on the sidewalk for pedestrians and outdoor seating. In addition, the proposed deeper canopies will support greater public activation by increasing weather protection, allowing the movable doors to be open more often. This interaction between the interior and exterior will enhance the success of the Flanders Greenway investment. We strongly oppose the relocation of the hotel entrance to Flanders Street from the corner. The PD&A successfully fought for the valet drop-off zone to be located on 12th Avenue in order to reduce safety impacts for people walking and rolling along the Flanders Greenway. Moving the entrance to Flanders would encourage valet and drop-off activities to migrate to the Greenway and would defeat the purpose of moving the valet zone to 12th Avenue. And then in terms of, this isn't directly in the purview, but some committee members expressed interest in learning whether the design team is contemplating any building alterations or other design considerations in response to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, including the impact on public spaces and the internal movement of persons around and within a building. We recognize no building codes or guidelines exist to evaluate this proposal. However, the adjustments in massing may provide an opportunity to reconsider the design of the common areas of the building. We recognize and appreciate the proposed additional setbacks on Flanders is one such adjustment. So I kept it brief. I know this is a narrow scope. Again, appreciate your efforts. That's what we have so far today. Thank you.
You're on mute, Sam.
Yeah, hold on a second, Carrie. Yeah, I saw that you raised your hand. Thank you, David, for your testimony. Thank you, everybody else, for their testimony. Carrie, you wanted to complete your testimony.
I just wanted to suggest, I don't know whether we lost Rita and Carl and Patricia. I'm not seeing them, but I wanted to see if we could give them a chance one more time before we move on to the applicant.
Yeah, so thanks. Thank you, Councilor Carey.
Sorry.
That's okay. Sam, I was going to say much what Carey was saying to you. I want to make sure we get Patricia in, and hopefully she was able to sort out the tech.
Okay. Well, so Denise.
And then also, sorry, Sam, and just one last thing. I mean, for Rita, if she wants testimony, she has 1 minute left from the time held over. So we could do it in either order. I guess I want to do a sound check with Patricia first, maybe. Patricia, are you there?
Yeah, so Patricia and Carl also has not. So Laura, is there anybody in the waiting room?
No. You can ask if anyone would like to testify, anyone else, they can raise their hand and we can.
So I don't know if Rita, you ceded your time. Do you have a few more things to say?
Please testify.
Now you're mute. Oh, there you go.
I can just give you a quick 1 minute's worth and then I'll stop. But I had a little bit more than that, but I can say what.
Fine.
What
take a couple of minutes to complete your testimony.
My name is Rita Seilin. I've lived at 416 Northwest 13th Avenue for 21 years in the historic district of the Pearl. As an advanced practice nurse, I've cared for very sick people under anesthesia for 42 years. But since February, every one of us has gotten quite good at what crowding can mean to our health since the onset of the coronavirus. All interested people, no matter what profession, now have gotten to be experienced, but we don't know it all. And the facts continue to evolve. One thing that doesn't change is the threat of crowding. Doesn't change. Just yesterday, the CDC published another update in their risk description with a bit of a twist, described on National Public Radio today and easily searchable on CDC's website. The long-known risk of proximity to an infected person, symptoms or without symptoms, and duration, which has always been 6 feet for 15 minutes, now includes the caveat that the duration of 15 minutes is cumulative. Think standing in the lobby, waiting for an elevator, moving one's bicycle into and out of the building, awaiting valet parking, checking into the hotel, and on and on and on, combined with other exposure you've had during the day. Our entire culture's changed, and we don't have a vaccine. We don't even have a promise of one. And then it's going to have to be produced and distributed. So I think we have to face that our entire culture has changed, and crowding is not the optimal to any of us, whether it's traffic and the dangers there, or is it going to be standing in lobbies or busy corners or the check-in desk of the hotel. I just ask you to please think about the design of this building and deny the project.
Thank you, Rita. Appreciate it. So let me just sort of go back. I'm looking at names. I'm trying to look at my little squares here and the list just to see if Patricia. Oh, there you are. It says you say Denise. So it says Denise Green. Okay. So that's
can I be heard as well or just seen?
Yes, you can be heard and seen. So why?
Okay, good. Thank you very much for your patience. Amen. I appreciate your help with the technology. My name is Patricia Cliff. I reside at 311 Northwest 12th in the Pearl. I am the president of Pearl Neighbors for Integrity and Design, PNID, whose mission it is to protect and enhance the livability of the Pearl District by promoting good, substantial architectural development, which incorporates inclusionary housing. Having spent over 40 years of my career working with developers in many aspects of the real estate business in New York City, I am cognizant of the numerous and diverse current studies that are being made by international architects and urban designers to address the built environment, which should evolve in a post-COVID-19 pandemic threatened world. These include alternatives to high-rise developments in favor of low-rise developments on larger sites, which can be serviced by high-speed escalators, which allow for social distancing. 2, high-speed elevators with kick buttons, upscale ventilation units, UV disinfection systems, and touch-free technologies galore. 3, larger apartments in multifamily buildings which lend themselves to flexible layouts and incorporate separate areas for home offices and homeschooling space, as well as private outdoor family recreational space. 4, reduced use of crowded public transportation and increased use of hybrid e-bikes, including those large enough to transport goods and children, which will necessitate electric charging stations for e-bikes. 5, increased use of e-delivery trucks, as Amazon is putting to use, to transport goods and food ordered online. 6, automated elevators, elevated on-site garage parking equipped with charging stations for e-vehicles that obviate the need for personal off-street parking of vehicles. It should be noted that Robert Cossey, the Dean of Engineering and Computer Science at Portland State University and an indoor air specialist, ran a model of hypothetical elevator ride, which showed that viral droplets can linger in the air and infect other passengers using the elevator well after an infected person exits. The general consensus of emerging opinions is avoid crowding in hallways and public areas of buildings, as well as abutting sidewalks. By these standards, the Hyatt project presents an antediluvian structure rather than the marquee precedent-setting building that Mayor Wheeler had hoped it would become. Consequently, it should be viewed as such and not approved for construction in a post-pandemic adjusted environment. For these reasons, I request that the Design Commission reevaluate the design of this structure in light of the present health pandemic environment. Thank you for your time.
Hello?
We ready for Carl?
I can't hear anybody. Can you hear me?
Sam, you're on mute.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Dear commissioners, my name is Carl von Frieling, and for the past 10 years, I have resided at 311 Northwest 12th Avenue in the borough after a career in management consulting. My wife and I chose to move to Portland because at the time it was a vibrant, progressive, walkable city replete with exciting cultural events and creative food and wine culture. In the interim, much has changed, reducing the livability factor dramatically. Portland has been overwhelmed by the effects of disease. First, COVID-19, and then another epidemic in Portland's homeless camps of shigellosis, a highly contagious form of diarrhea, prevalent in areas of extreme poverty in the third world countries. The failure of the city to address the contagion factor of these illnesses is a failure of civic responsibility. There is little doubt in medical circles about how these diseases spread throughout the community. Crowding on the streets where people walk adjacent to the tented homeless community, and crowding in restaurants, schools, hotels, and event spaces within high-rise buildings dependent upon elevators to transport the public to their destination. The Design Commission approved the Hyatt development project in January 2020 after numerous hearings, which preliminarily focused on the exterior design of the building. There was no consideration, in spite of repeated urging by the large numbers of community members who participated in the Design Commission hearing, to focus on the intensity of use. 160 hotel rooms plus event rooms and 113 small studio and one bedroom apartments squeezed into a 10,000 square feet site with 100 foot linear street access to service the ingress and egress and service needs of this 273 unit, 23 floor high rise. Community members were repeatedly told by the Bureau of Development and Sustainability, who conducted these hearings, that this was not within the purview of the Design Commission. I beg to differ. The realm category of the public realm, a category of concern with which the Design Commission is clearly charged, is very negatively affected by the overcrowding on this very limited site. Approval of a design of this type is approval of a potentially super spreader edifice with major public health implications. I believe it was the grave error on behalf of the Design Commission and BDS which deserves reconsideration at this time. I respectfully request that the Design Commission reevaluate its prior approval of the Hyatt project in light of the public health issues which are at stake now as well as in the future post-pandemic environment. Urban planners and architects, nationally and internationally, are already engaged in designing safer, more sustainable, and user-friendly built environments. Portland deserves to be at the cutting edge of this movement, not trailing behind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carl. Laura, is there anybody that signed up since we started the testimony?
No.
Did I hear no?
Correct. I don't see anyone else.
Okay, great. Fantastic. So if we don't have anybody else, I will have the applicant then you would have 20 minutes for your presentation. So I don't know who is presenting on behalf of the applicant.
This is Gary Larson. We'll be doing the presenting.
Great. Great, Gary. So please give your name and address and when you're ready to start sharing.
It seems like I can't turn on the video. I see. Host has stopped it. So. Okay, then you will hear me.
We will hear you.
I can hear you, Gary.
We are here today to respond to the remand that the City Council recently issued and sent back to you as the Design Commission to reconsider and further discuss. We have prepared some ideas which we think are helpful. Our concerns are certainly genuine, and that we want to share this information with you and get your feedback as well as your counsel in terms of our approach to go forward. Next. First of all, what we heard and what we did, these have always been the start of any project. What we heard, first of all, was that the City Council basically took the issue of height off the table as an issue, and that but moreover what they did say was that the purpose of the remand was to make a better building, and with that in mind, that's how we have proceeded to respond and explore the ideas that we're going to show you today. Furthermore, they said they directed us to consider further setbacks at the middle and top, the massing at the middle and top. We have heard all this already, and improvements to the public realm, and to address specific guidelines, chiefly the neighborhood context, the industrial character, and the historic district. And what we did, first of all, a work we've done it responds directly to each council directive. And we did that by creating three schemes that we'll go through with you, which explore the context, chiefly involved with utilizing setbacks, the massing, exploring actual reductions in the massing of the building, and a host of improvements to the public realm. And out of that study, we have prepared a preferred scheme that we believe addresses all the council comments and directives. A quick review of the district. You've seen this diagram in the upper left many times. It describes the eclectic nature of the district, of the neighborhood. And that is its strength, and that is also what gives it its charm. You see a view below looking down 13th Avenue, and to the right of the diagram, a picture of the Casey building, which was a new building at its point in time and brought with it some new architectural language as well as new materials, In addition to the precast of the building, it has a curtain wall system for a portion of the building and these very interesting long balconies, which are used to address the corner. At the picture below, we see the Canopy Hotel, which it uses metal panels in a vertical expression as a new material. On the right side of the page, we see recent additions, a building at Gleason and 14th, which is just about to be completed. And of course, the not so recent addition, but a new member of the Pearl in the sense that it was built in 2006 with a view of it, the Casey building from 13th Avenue. The four photographs below show what we typically see in the Pearl in terms of how the lower floors of the buildings are treated, with these large columns, tall bays that are filled in with glazing and with projecting canopies. It's a motif that you see throughout the Pearl, and it's used even today, as you can see in the lower left of this series, the Rodney, which adopts the same set of forms in order to make its connection to the district. Next. Now we're going to examine the schemes. So we'll start with scheme one, but before I want to just point out to the right, we've listed the guideline references with a short synopsis of what the guideline is concerned with. And we've done that simply to tag the particular image with what we're considering as both a goal and as a means to achieve that goal as we examine what we're possible to do. So what we're suggesting is that in the approved design, you see that we had a 2-foot setback for the middle of the building, a 5-foot setback for the top of the building. What we're proposing to do is to increase the setback at the middle by 3 feet and 7 feet at the top of the building. Now you see the movement here as this image toggles back and forth, that while these are modest moves, there is an appreciable improvement to the massing of the building, a reduction in the actual size of the building. We've reduced floor space in order to achieve these setbacks. And we think it's an effective tool. If you look at the view here and see the moves that we make, what also happens is that by making these effective but small increases, that we are able to clearly articulate the pieces and parts of the building. And this adds to a sense of improved fit within the neighborhood, as well as addressing an issue of achieving a more elegant building. Here we're looking at the ground level and the moves that we're making here. I will just explain briefly, and then we'll get into more detail as we get to the third scheme. But here, first of all, I want to point out that the base of the building we consider to be one of the chief tools that we have, one of the chief opportunities that we have to make a relationship to the existing context of the neighborhood. The base is at roughly 50 feet or 4 stories from the ground level. And these moves that we make reinforce the notion that is expressed, as you've seen in the photographs, throughout the neighborhood. What we're doing here at the ground level is to push back the storefront face of the Flanders elevation by 2 feet. We are extending the canopies by 16 inches to 6 feet, and we are proposing to make some adjustments to the fenestration of the storefront, which I will then explain later when we get to scheme three. Next. Here we have a view from the west, which shows the effect of these setback moves. Again, there is a reduction in the mass, and I believe that there is value in seeing that we can achieve a greater degree of articulation of these forms. And I think that this is effective in terms of settling the building into the context. Now we go on to Scheme 2. Scheme 2 examines a different tactic in terms of addressing the massing. Here we are proposing, and you see here in front of you the approved design, we are considering moving the cornice line of the middle of the building down by one floor. And what this does do is to actually reduce the mass, but also gives an apparent reduction in the height of the building. A view looking down 12th Avenue as we explore this move. Same here, you see that it does actually reduce the mass of the building by taking away that bit of space, but it also appreciably, I think, and effectively shows an apparent reduction in the height. All of this is an effort to fit the building more comfortably within its location in the district. At the ground level, then, a quick review here. This shows what we're proposing to do, and we'll get to that shortly. This is a view looking west on Flanders, and you can see the effect of lowering the cornice line at the mid portion of the building. A view from the west and the same maneuver. From the west is particularly interesting because we think that this does improve the sense of an apparent reduction in height. And now we'll go on to Scheme 3. Scheme 3, we've suggested already, that proposes to push the storefront elevation back 3 feet from what we have earlier proposed, from 3 foot six to 5 foot six. The purpose of doing that, of course, is to increase the available sidewalk by taking the program area that would spill out during summer months, that is to say the cafe tables and whatnot, more effectively into the private zone of the site, and make more of the sidewalk available for comfortable pedestrian movement along it. Extending the canopies simply provides more cover up to the whole sidewalk walking zone of 6 feet, and also, of course, provides cover for the private area and the activity that could go on there. Then finally, we are addressing the fenestration of the curtain wall itself. The previous photos showed what the ground level of many of the buildings in the Portland, in the Pearl District look like. And what you can see there is that many of them are showing more husky kinds of separations between the glazing portions. And this was done chiefly by using the technology that was available at the time they were built, which involved maybe more structure and smaller opportunities for glass size. But what we want to do is to connect back to that idea of a more textured wall at the storefront by introducing these simple moves of adding a 12-inch panel vertically at the center of the bay and horizontally at the location you see there. We think this helps to further establish the connection of the base of the building to the character of the Pearl District. Now, the next move we have shows relocating the hotel entrance to the first bay to the east from the corner. And we're not suggesting that we advocate this idea at all, but we have it here for your examination and consideration. What we see here, attempt here was to separate the entrances of the residential from the hotel. And what happens here then is that the program that was in the new entrance location moves to the corner so that it creates a very strong active space that's available visually from the street. However, we think that the location of the entrance in the corner is a superior idea. What we've tried very hard to do in the development with your guidance over the past several years is to create a very vibrant northwest corner in celebration of the intersection, which is one of the guidelines that we are attempting to serve. What happens here then as we move that entrance over is I think it does diminish the power of the corner. We would rather have the canopy at the high level than at the low level. And so we offer this simply for your consideration. And as you've heard already, that the location of the entrance along Flanders was thought to compromise the use of the greenway and the bike travel along it. Another view of that same idea, here you see it dropping at the corner. We think also that the entrance in its original location is stronger because what we can do there is to have access from the hotel entrance to both streets. And it does maintain that strong sense of the corner that we're all attempting to achieve. Now there's one last view here of the move from as seen from above. Now we want to go on to the preferred scheme that we're offering you. We've looked at all of these ideas and thought that if they all make a contribution, we can use them together in a scheme that we believe begins to answer the issues that were raised by the council. Here you see both of the ideas put together in the tower where we are using increased setbacks and also lowering the cornice line of the middle of the building by one floor. And here you see that there is a reduction in the mass of the building. This is real. And that you also see a mass reduction because of the lowering of that cornice line. And if we toggle back and forth just a bit here, you see that there's actually this slenderizing of the building, which I think is appreciable. But also I'd like to point out that it does allow us to articulate those building components a little more completely, which is an advantage and creates what we believe is a more elegant solution. Here's looking down 12th Avenue again to see what happens here. These are what you might call modest, but I think effective moves in terms of answering the issues of setback. At the ground level then, as we introduce the improvements for the public realm, you see what happens here when we are able to push back the top of the building by 7 feet. That 7 feet produces 2 extra feet at the ground floor at the entrance to the hotel. And that basically gives us more space at the ground level for pedestrian movement. All of this helps to diffuse what's perceived to be the intensity at the street. We are not addressing at this point the trees and so forth. They continue as we've designed them in the approved design. And the same issues pertain there in terms of what we're able to do under using the development codes for sidewalks and the public realm. Here you see the effect of the 7 feet as well. And this one shows it, I think, to great advantage that you actually do achieve more space at the corner and that this is an improvement simply because it makes more space available at the street. Looking west on Flanders, you see the effect of both moves here. I think this is particularly noteworthy in terms of reducing the apparent height of the building. And from the west, you can see what these moves make. Now, it's been said, and of course, you know, we understand this, that it would be great if we could do a lot more. We are pushing the limits of what we are able to do here. I know that's not a concern of really for the Design Commission, but it's real in terms of the development of the project. What we are attempting to do here is create a project that is respectful, responsible, and that has done everything we can to really knit it into the texture and fabric of the Pearl. And we believe that this preferred scheme comes close to delivering that objective. And so we are here now. Thank you very much. We are here for listening to your comments. We certainly want your guidance in this process. And we are here to answer any questions you might have.
Commissioner, is there any questions for the applicant? For Gary?
Yeah, Gary, what is the anticipated completion date for the project?
Well, it depends on when we get all the approvals put in place, but completion could be as far as 4 years out.
I have a question, Gary. Can you go back to the mullions you were talking about? I wasn't clear on whether you were trying to make them thinner or
no.
Looked like no, they were quite, getting thicker, but I didn't understand the explanation.
Yeah, quite the opposite. We are trying to make them thicker. Okay. And we're doing that in an effort to be more representing of the existing texture of similar circumstances in the Pearl.
Got it. Thanks. That's my only question.
So, in follow-up to that, is that connected to the setback of the storefronts, or it's independent of that?
No, it is connected to the storefront. It's going to be in the same plane as the storefront.
But the thickening of mullion, could you set back the storefronts but keep your mullions the way it was before?
Well, the mullions are holding the window glazing.
Right.
And they did it. That whole assembly has to be set back.
Okay. And in order to be set back, those mullions need to be thickened, widened, correct?
They don't need to be, but we are suggesting that they would
be. That was my question. Yeah, they don't they need be. To be, but okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anybody else?
I have a question. Do you happen to have a plan view so that we can see the impact of the change of the location of the entry?
Yes, we have a plan view. It doesn't actually show the new, but we can point that out. Nate can show you where these changes would occur. Here at the corner, you'll see it goes back another 2 feet.
Okay.
And at the Flanders Street elevation, it goes back another 2 feet, in other words, clear to the back of those columns, so that it does open up more space that is indeed part of the site itself, but is allows the removal of some of the cafe tables and so on more clearly onto the private space, and opens up the sidewalk. All of this is an effort to try to create enough space or more space in the public realm so that we can be more assured that this is going to be a comfortable circumstance for pedestrians.
Thank you.
Okay, so I don't have any questions. If there's nothing else, I think we'll move on to a rebuttal from the appellant.
And Sam, just to confirm, I don't know that we have any other testifiers support. I just want to double check.
That's a good point. So, Laura?
No.
Okay, thank you.
So there's no more testimony from the public, so we'll, Carrie, if you could lead your rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair Rodriguez and Commissioners. My name is Carrie Richter again. Just a couple of observations. With respect to Scheme 1, the tripartite composition question, I'm referring to Guideline 511. Says design buildings which provide a unified monolithic tripartite composition with distinct cornice lines to acknowledge the historic building fabric. So the reference here is to the historic building fabric. And I don't know that these changes reflect the historic building fabric. Certainly, I haven't seen even a rendering that shows the historic building fabric in relation to this building from the starting point. Second, it's the historic building fabric that we're trying to reflect. So whether or not this is an effective change or whether it improves the design or not is not the issue. The issue is whether or not we're reflecting the historic building fabric. And the issue is that it is correct that these massive columns reflect the industrial warehouse design element of the Pearl, but they can't be seen from the historic district. And so I think the reason why the applicant's proposing this tripartite design is to reflect the historic district in the design somehow, but we haven't seen that reflect, we haven't seen evidence of that to make that determination. And I just don't think that these changes in cornice line are based on historic proportions so that we can evaluate whether or not it is reflective of the historic district. With regard to the idea of reinforcing the notion of the neighborhood, where is tripartite design used in new construction in the neighborhood? When it is used, what do the cornice lines look like? That is the kind of evidence we would need to make this evaluation and not a material study that shows new materials used in the district. With respect to Scheme 2 and lowering the cornice lines, again, why is it that that lowering is the appropriate amount of lowering? Why isn't it much lower? What is the it seems to me that the Pearl District and ought to be driving that question, and that evidence isn't here for the Design Commission's evaluation. With respect to Scheme 3, it is incorrect to say that pushing the window bays back increases the amount of sidewalk. People cannot walk through these columns. They have to go around them. So a person would have to go around the columns in order to walk in this area in any direction. So it's not, it does not provide additional walking space. It provides standing space at best for the public. It does not provide bicycle parking. It does not provide a bench. It does not provide a tree. Most of the time, according to the applicant, in order to create active building ground floor and eyes on the street, these doors are going to be open and cafe tables are going to be set there. So that makes it private space. Most of the time it's going to be private space. So I don't see that this gives the type of robust, active comfortable, accessible public pedestrian realm that the guidelines envision. Scheme 3 does not get to the issue of conflict between the loading bay and the residential entrance. That was not talked about by the applicant at all. And this was a significant, significant concern from at least 2, 3, potentially 4 of the counselors. So this is a huge issue that needs to be addressed. Relocating the hotel entrance doesn't do anything to reduce the conflict about the number of deliveries, the number of services that the residents of this facility, of this building will require. And until we can get into that, I'm not sure that talking about pushbacks by 1 foot or moving cornice lines down 2 feet really gets to the heart of the problem. With that, I would urge you to deny this application, or at the very least continue it so that we can continue having this discussion. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you very much.
Commissioners, any questions for Carrie at this time?
No. Not at this time.
No. Okay. So, Tim, I'm going to close testimony at this point and open discussion. Is that, again, we're kind of in, this is a little bit new, so I want to make sure that we're doing it the right order.
Well, yeah, you just had a lot of information has been presented. You had a lot of information submitted prior to the hearing. You all have been doing a lot of review. Now let's talk.
Okay. So with that,
Tim,
go ahead.
Yes, Commissioner.
Are we allowed to ask question of Art?
Absolutely. Yes. I would keep it to staff as best as possible.
Right. Okay.
Great. With that, I think we're going to start with the discussion. But before that, I'd like to sort of frame a little bit our discussion based on some of basically putting on front of you, commissioners, what we are really discussing today and what things are probably not things are not discussed today. There's a lot of discussion about whether, you know, PBOT issues and issues related to transportation and so forth, whether they should be or not should be in our purview. They're not in our purview. So I am going to just at this point try to narrow that out, pull that out of the discussion as it stands today. I mean, we are going to discuss this based on the tenets that we always do of contextuality, public realm. And at this point, I think we already went through the quality and permanence, but you know, if anybody has any questions, we can open that a little bit up too. But I'd like to keep this as narrow as possible, given that it is a remand and we have already, and mind you, unanimously approved this project to move forward. I watched twice the hearing with City Council, and there was I think a lot of in my mind there were issues that were not necessarily related to the guidelines, which is what we always base our decisions. And it's all about the meaning of guidelines on balance, because not all guidelines can be met in its totality, and it's whether the project meets these guidelines on balance. I mean, we are here, I mean, the guidelines are the fundamental city design guidelines, as Art pointed out, as well as the River District guidelines. And I think Commissioner Fritz's major objection was about contextuality. So I'd like to concentrate our discussion a little bit around the contextuality of this building within the Pearl District. And then obviously the public realm is important. And then obviously the moves that have been proposed, the new moves that have been proposed by the applicant. So with that, I want to also point out that it's true that this is, that's, you know, Central City 2035 is the basis of the design for this project, and that the Central City 2035 was a well thought out and highly discussed document, which is the one we are looking at. The densities that are proposed are those of those that the city has set up as a goal. So I think we need to keep that in mind when we're having our discussion about contextuality as well as the public realm. I would like to add the Pearl District is an incredibly amalgamation of buildings of all types, all sizes, and all eras now that it's being fairly developed. So with that, I'd like to open discussion. So I was wondering if anybody wants to start, wants to volunteer, or we're going to make me pick someone. Well, Don, you're on the big screen for me, so you get picked.
So my view of the context is this. The Pearl District has been in transition for 120 years. It started out as single-family houses, which then transitioned sometime in the 20s to the 50s into a warehouse distribution center. And then in the 80s, some of those warehouses were obsolete, so they started to transition into housing. And ever since, it has become more of a housing neighborhood. So that's sort of phase three. And when the guidelines, or rather when the city council passed the 2035 plan, all of a sudden we're allowed this incredible amount of FAR. The guidelines have really not kept up with the 2035 plan, in my view. And so here we are, we have to evaluate this, not in terms of all the guidelines referring back to warehouses, et cetera, but in terms of evaluating the building on its own merits, which I think we did pretty well back in January and in fact, the prior year. So again, it's very much in transition, and this was not anticipated in the guidelines that we have. So I think we have to just take a look at it from a different viewpoint and evaluate it from that and hopefully move forward. Eventually, perhaps the guidelines will catch up and we'll have something more tangible to work with. Again, this is a groundbreaking project. It's the first, certainly in this area. There's some other high-rise buildings further to the north in the Pearl District. But again, there's some 10-story, 12-story type buildings in here. So it's not entirely an orphan in this particular neighborhood. But a 22-story is certainly higher than anything we've seen in this part of the Pearl. So my comments for now.
Right. I'm going to go immediately to my left is Jessica. So I'm just going to go in order.
Okay. I agree with a lot of what Don said. And I would just like to point out that the reference to warehouses and tripartite are some of the ways that the guidelines can be accomplished. And the guidelines clearly state that. And for good reason. And having just gone through DOZA, I think we all understand why, because we want there to be flexibility in the guidelines for other interpretations of things. So the guidelines don't say this needs to look like a warehouse. Any building you design in the Pearl District needs to look like a warehouse. It simply isn't the case. And I think from my perspective that the guidelines for the overall building, in particular the context guidelines, are still met regardless of the pushing back or pulling down of the cornice lines. They do create a more svelte appearance for the tower, but I don't think that guidelines really require that. Is it better? Would the neighborhood like it more? Sure. But I, from the position that I'm sitting in, I just don't think that it is a requirement. However, when we get to pedestrian realm guidelines. I do think that some of those changes that do impact the pedestrian realm do make a truly perceivable beneficial improvement to the previous design that we saw by allowing the uses of the hotel to stay more in the zone of the hotel and allow the public uses to go past without interruption, mostly by tables and chairs that could be spilling out onto the sidewalks. And I would also like to point out that most buildings in the Pearl don't have their own private patios for tables and chairs. They spill out onto the sidewalk, or they use parklet type park. They take over parking spaces and put tables and chairs in those spaces because most buildings in the Pearl go to the property line. That's the way that this neighborhood works. So I think I kind of took context and public realm together there. No, but that's fine.
That's good.
But I think that's the gist of it.
Great. Chandra, you're next to my left, so.
Hi. I agree with Jessica. I think that the moves that were made on the upper volume of the building may be an improvement. They don't change my perception of how it fits into the context of the Pearl. A little bit more sculpting is nice, and honestly, when I looked at the package, because the before and after images are next to each other, that difference wasn't clear, but when the applicant was switching back and forth between them, that was sort of more dynamic, and it was a lot easier to see how the massing of the volume is perceived and how that change happens. And so I appreciated it more once I saw it sort of move back and forth. So that really applies to how far we're pushing back the volume of the building and how much they're bringing the cornice, as it's called, down. And you know, a cornice like you see on other warehouse buildings in the Pearl is just not appropriate on a tower. It doesn't look right. It doesn't, the overall concept of the building doesn't seem to make sense if you add a cornice onto it. And so I think that when we're looking at the guidelines, it really is an interpretation, and you don't want all buildings to have, you know, to have to say, yes, this has to look like a warehouse. A very tall warehouse makes no sense. I think that as you are a pedestrian or a person in a car driving past the site, you still understand that there's sort of that base that that overall is sort of representative of what's happening on other buildings in the district. And so you get this sort of volume shift, I think makes sense. As the form. So I think that the changes that were made to the upper floors of the building make sense to me. They still meet guidelines in terms of context. It does look a little bit different from other buildings in the area, but I don't think that means that it doesn't meet the context. It's a new kind of building for that location. Sam, do you want me to go on?
Why don't you go to public? I mean, to the public realm, just since Jessica did the same, and we'll circle back to Don on public realm in a minute.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to also address. I mean, I don't know. Can I pull everybody to see if we want to address the entrance issue also, or we should maybe do that as a separate item?
Yeah, I would prefer a separate item.
Okay, so let's just do it as a separate item. So, yeah, Chandra, can you continue on the moves that they made on the public realm, on the sidewalk level and public realm as a part of the public realm discussion?
Yes.
Sam?
Commissioner Chandra, real quick. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I want to insert myself for a moment.
I was going to point to Tim raising his hand, so you were not one.
I wasn't gesturing enough. It's like, is the flag not enough?
I can only dumb. I can't walk at the same time, so I'm sorry.
Okay, Sam. No, that's okay. I just wanted to clarify. We're speaking about the applicant's preferred scheme. You know, you guys were talking about context, and I don't know that I heard that directly, but I do believe Don was referencing the preferred scheme, as was Jessica and Chandra. That's what we're working off of. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's all.
So looking at the lower levels of the building and how they perform in terms of public realm. I don't think that pushing back, and I'm sorry, I'm not looking straight at the camera because I'm looking at the image on my other screen. I don't think that pushing back another couple of feet at the ground level is going to do anything. It really, I know that there's operable windows on the ground floor. Those doors you can actually see in plan, right? They fold out accordion style and then tuck into the sides. And that means that there's sort of really full connection between what's happening on the sidewalk and what's happening inside that space. I totally agree with Jessica that in the rest of the Pearl District, those tables and chairs are in the right of way. The buildings go to the property line, and it is part of the character of the neighborhood where you are close to the activity. And when you create, when you increase the depth of that recess, you're farther away from the activity. So I don't think that that's a move that is necessary. I don't think it improves the public realm. I think it takes away from it a little bit. And I know that, you know, some folks were talking about the amount of, you know, homeless folks in the neighborhood. I think that just, you know, those are great places for people to hang out in the winter when those doors aren't open, and that may not be the kind of activity that people want. I don't think that, you know, building less housing and fewer hotel rooms is going to have any impact on public health, and it's certainly not going to help decrease the number of homeless folks. So I don't think that that is something that we should do on this building. I think it's working fine the way it is. We have talked in the past about where that loading zone is compared to the residential entry, but really it makes sense. I mean, there will be a lot of deliveries in there, and I think that the number of cars sort of stopping in that area does have an impact on the public realm. But really, because this is such a small building, the second you go around the corner, the character of that street changes a lot from being really heavy car traffic to, once it has the green loop on it, having a different character. And I think that it's quite close already. So we're going to talk about the entry separately. So those are my comments on the public ground floor.
Thank you, Chandra. Appreciate it. Zari?
Well, I think everybody stole what I was going to say.
Oh, no.
And that's the advantage of being the last person. You know, I think we worked on this building for a long time. And at the end, we voted on it because we felt that was a strong building and it met majority of the guidelines to a level that was approvable. And I still believe that. But having said that, the preferred scheme, I'm going to go over each item specifically as it relates to the context. I think what makes Pearl so unique and what really is an identifying factor for Pearl is the eclectic nature of its architecture, and which is representative of all the development eras that Don was mentioning. And given that, this whole notion, this building trying to, in a very 21st century manner, respond to some elements of that, which this idea of tripartite, the base and the middle and the top, but it's a contemporary representation of that. It's a very, very strong contextual response and a very, very strong response to guideline A5, enhance, embellish, and identify the area. So I think that's very, very strong to begin with. And the setbacks definitely makes the building narrower, perceived to be narrower and more elegant. So from my perspective, the contextual guidelines are met. And on the public realm, I'm in complete agreement with Chandra. I I keep thinking if you push back these storefronts, you create more space for tables and chairs. And they don't spill over into the public realm, which really gives vitality to the public realm. And the sidewalks are the size consistent throughout Flanders. So pushing it back and it would separate, creates more separation between public using the right of way and the people who are using those spaces. And particularly in wintertime, when the windows, the doors are closed, there is a bigger separation between public and what the activities of the building. And that's 6 or 7 months of the year in Portland. And having the ability to walk and look at people and even peek over what they're eating, that's what generates interest in public realm. So from that perspective, I think that the original scheme is stronger in terms of public realm. And I agree that I don't really see a conflict to the degree that the neighborhood is concerned between the loading dock and the residential entrance. And we had quite a bit of conversation. There was, I think earlier on, there was an idea of having the loading dock maybe on Flanders, but that's a greenway street and conflicted with that. So that was really the logical place for it. So anyways, basically I'm repeating what everybody else has said. So I'm in agreement.
Thank you, Zeri. Appreciate it. Don, do you want to talk about public realm?
Hey, Sam. I was going to interject with some comments from Brian. He had some written comments, Commissioner Brian. And I'll just give you the ones that are about context and then and public realm, but not the entry, since we're holding that as separate, if that sounds okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
So Brian's comments about the massing on the upper levels, he said that the previously approved design met the guidelines because it had a clear expression of the base, middle, and top. And it had the correctly scaled base because the concrete was sort of muscular and it related to the industrial heritage of the neighborhood. It has a great expression of ledges and pilasters in concrete in front of the skin that gives them structural depth and strength, which is similar to those warehouse buildings. He really just says the revised design also meets the guidelines for the same reasons, only it's a slightly stronger response because of the revisions to the tower setbacks, including the revision to the cornice and dropping it down another floor on either side. So he thinks that that is a good response to context. It's a little bit better than it was before. And now when I look at it, he has much more comments about the entry and what's happening on the ground floor, but really he says that that, you know, C4 complement the context of existing buildings. Again, he says the revised design proposes increasing the ground floor setbacks from the property line from 3.5 to 5.5. The context of the existing buildings and the normal pattern of the historic Pearl District is to place the building's ground floor storefront windows at the property line. That's what's in the neighborhood. And as the neighborhood has increased dramatically in density with more pedestrians on the street, the River District right-of-way standards recognize this by allowing merchant cafe zones setback to encourage active sidewalk uses. And in his opinion, the 3.5-foot setback at the ground floor on Flanders was a good balance of room for tables, pedestrians furnishing street trees, and was enhanced by the ability to open those ground floor windows on temperate days, allowing the perception of greater cafe activity. And he cites a similar condition at 12th and Harvey Milk at Bamboo Sushi, where they have big walls that open up. He says that he's concerned that the 5.5-foot setback of the proposed design actually goes too far and will remove the cafe activity, especially in the winter, too far from adjacent pedestrians. There are successful cafes in many locations in the Pearl District on those small 12-foot sidewalks, and it's part of the neighborhood charm. So he feels that the approved design is a stronger response to this guideline, and says that the 3.5-foot setback is preferred. And so really he's saying all the things that we've already said in here. I just wanted to read it into the record to make sure we have his notes.
Thank you so much, Chandra. Thank you for reminding me, because I forgot that I had to do that. Don, you want
to
public realm comments?
Yes. Just a couple of comments. I didn't talk about the building sculpting, but at first I thought, gee, you know, moving that thing back 2 feet isn't going to have much of an impact, and also lowering the cornice line by one story wouldn't have much of an impact. But in fact, as you toggle back and forth, it did have an impact. It may be subtle, but I think it's meaningful. And in the aggregate, I think it works. On the public realm, I agree with a lot of what has been said thus far. I think it's important not to do too deep of a setback on Flanders, because in the winter months, then you have a big dark cavity there, and that's a negative. Also, restaurant tables are typically 4 by 4 feet. And if it's a 3.5-foot setback, it only intrudes then on the public sidewalk by 6 inches, which is pretty negligible. So I don't think there's any issue there at all. In terms of, we're not going into the entry yet, but and I think regarding the tripartite composition, again, it's sort of a modern take on it. It should not be seen as a historical, maybe just a nod to the rather than trying to be too literal with all that. And I think they've done a pretty good job. So
thank you. I'll bring my 2 cents to in terms of the contextuality. I agree generally with my fellow commissioners. We approved it before. We thought that on balance it met the contextual guidelines as interpreted in a very eclectic neighborhood with multiple types and of new buildings, old buildings, and so forth. I think the tripartite, we've always understood the tripartite as not a literal thing, but more of an evocation it is a tripartite. It's just in a tower, and it's not a cornice. It's just a different interpretation. Based on what I saw from the council hearing, in terms of one of the, nobody objected essentially on the height issues. Nobody objected in terms of that should be a tower, that it could be a tower. I mean, it is a tower. But there was some comments about further sculpting, and I agree with you, Donna. At first I saw it and I'm like, well, I don't know if this is making a lot of change. I mean, these changes are so subtle. Are they really going to be significant? But I agree with you that if the impact is much bigger than it seems in the flat drawings when you see it dynamically. I think several other of my fellow commissioners mentioned the same thing. So from a contextual perspective, in my opinion, the project met the contextual guidelines before, it meets it now. The further sculpting, I think, is a slight refinement. Is it necessary? Not 100% necessary. Does it slim down the building a little bit? Yes, it does, and I think it's a good improvement. In terms of the ground floor context, I agree with, I think, Zeri, Chandra, I think everybody in that the pushback is although on plan might look like a good thing to do, I think this is a neighborhood of zero lot line buildings. A slight push was a good compromise to create a niche for tables. But something too deep is not necessarily, and I don't think there needs to be a proportion of height to cavity. I mean, to setback. I think the setback was fine as it was. It was a well-proportioned setback, and I think it, you know, the point of the Pearl District is that it's vital, is that it's got a lot of people on the street, and the only way to get people on the street is to have activities that are front and center on the face of the right of way to activate it. And I think this building does a good job at it. So I I mean, I'm not going to repeat more of it. I mean, I agree. I'm in general agreement that I think we meet the project needs the guidelines from a contextual and a ground floor activation perspective. So that's where I'm sitting. I think we should probably talk about the entrance. So I'm going to start the other way, Sari, so that you can go first. So I'm starting on the left.
Okay, the other way around. Well, C7, design corners that build active intersections. We spend so much time on the corner of this building trying to make it significant, to stand out. And it works. The approved design really works. And I am really sorry to see that even the applicant is proposing that. So my response is no, do not touch that corner because it works perfectly right now. So
here we go. So Jessica, you're next.
I agree with Sari. The location of the corner, or the location of the entrance on the corner, absolutely makes the most sense and is the best location to meet the guidelines. I absolutely would not be in favor of relocating it to Flanders for all the reasons we discussed at the previous hearings. But in general, because the Greenway is there and I do think there will be conflicts. And I would like to clarify, I think I am the only person who is in favor of the further setbacks because, and I was going to ask this question before we moved on, do you think because of the density of this building and its location at what will become a busy intersection that it does have more of a responsibility to set further back because there are going to be a lot of people hanging out, which is fantastic, on this corner spilling out down to the sides. So there is a potential for an inability to get through for pedestrians if there are tables and chairs, unlike on any other street mid-block or, you know, somewhere else.
But Jessica, I think, you know, the fact that the storefronts are movable and they're open, so the windows, the tables and chairs do not have to extend beyond the beginning of the columns. So they could still be within that 3.5 feet and inside, towards the inside, and leave the public realm completely open, but be perceived as if they are spilling over to the sidewalk.
They can be, but just because there's only that one bay is actually operable based on the plan that we saw, not the entire facade. And just because they can be opened doesn't mean they necessarily will be. It depends on who's operating the building and whether or not they want to or not. Anyway, it doesn't. We can move on. I was just curious.
Right.
I would encourage everybody as we go through the entrance discussion to further discuss that issue. I mean, I think it's a good. I understand where you're going, Jessica. I mean, your comment makes me think a little bit more about it. I'm just trying to think when
does it get too deep?
Yeah, when does it get too deep? That's exactly right. Shonda, do you want to go next? And then maybe you can also talk at the same time after you finish yours, do Brian?
Oh, sure. So the entry location, I agree with Sari and Jessica. We talked about it at length previously, and having the hotel entry at that corner and keeping that the high canopy is what really makes that a strong corner. When you drop that canopy down at the corner and then make the adjacent one high, it just doesn't make you connect with the way the building works from any distance, right? From a block away, I want to be able to look down and see, oh, that's where I go in. And depending on where I'm coming from, that's not going to happen at this building if that corner is not held. So I think that's really important. So totally agree. And let me take a look at Brian's comments. So Brian says, related to C7, design corners that build active intersections, what we're all just talking about. In the approved design, it met the guidelines. The primary entrance at the corner is a strong response that anchors the building solidly at the crossroads and showcases its importance with the higher, larger canopy. The curtain wall units coming all the way down to the second floor and the ribbon of balconies both give strength to that corner. The revised design meets the guidelines for the same reasons. However, moving the primary entrance to Flanders is a weaker response to the guidelines. We're talking about the setback. I'm gonna see if he writes anything else. Integrating signs, C13 integrating signs. The approved design meets the guideline with hotel signage integrated with the primary entrance canopy. The revised design also meets this guideline for the same reasons. However, the primary entrance and its signage on the corner is a stronger response. So Brian's saying that that signage and the higher canopy were important to hold the corner. And when you move it around the corner, now not only do you not have the higher canopy, but you also don't have the signage that clues you into what entry that is, you know, that it's the hotel entry, not the residential entry. So that's it for Brian's comments on that.
That's great, Shonda. Thank you so much for doing for channeling Brian tonight for us.
Got it.
Don, do you want to talk about the entrance, please?
Yeah, I agree with everybody, my fellow commissioners, that the entry needs to be on the corner. It would be a real mistake to try to move it further down. And but there is a little caveat to that, I think. The architect referenced that there is a possibility, and he suggested that they would do this, is move the corner entry back 2 feet. And that makes a certain amount of sense to me to give more milling room for people as they're approaching the entrance or going outside of the building before they start to obstruct pedestrian traffic on the sidewalk. I'd like to keep the Flanders storefronts at the same depth that the original design called for, but perhaps set back the main entry 2 feet, so to just to give a little more room on the sidewalk level.
Thank you.
And I agree with that. That was my comment.
Thank you, Don, for bringing that up, because I had forgotten that Gary had made that comment, and I think that is a very, very, very good one. I do think that is probably the, if you're going to do it anywhere, that's where you want to do that for the
full time. Yeah, exactly.
It would deepen the canopy space, and it would allow for some relief for people waiting for pickups or the, you know, coming in with bags and what have you. Yeah. I agree with everybody. I think the corner was something that we really labored over in discussions with the applicant. And holding that corner is a key piece of this tower composition, and I think moving it to the side and changing Brian's spot on that, changing those kind of canopy heights and signage and so forth into a side entrance is the wrong move. It doesn't help the guidelines at all, and I think the way it was done originally is the right location, so my position also. Tim, Art, have we missed anything?
So it might be good to, I don't think so, but I think it would be good to just clarify a couple things, to clarify that it sounds like the commission was responding to the preferred scheme that the applicant showed.
Yes.
And that the commission, and I'm just going to say this kind of, you know, broadly speaking, supported all the moves that the applicant proposed for their preferred scheme, except for there wasn't a unanimous feeling about the setbacks at the ground floor. And
on Flanders.
Correct, on Flanders. And then Don, Commissioner Vallister floated the idea of
kind of playing off of the idea of putting the entrance, the applicant, not in the preferred scheme, but the applicant was showing the entrance off of Flanders, and that was unanimously not supported by commission. But the idea of pushing the entrance, and this is what I want a little bit more clarity on, pushing the entrance at the corner back an additional 2 feet. And is that 2 feet both on Flanders and 12th?
Yeah. Art, wait, before you go on, that 2 feet, just to clarify, was part of pushing the tower mass back. It wasn't an extra 2 feet. At least that's not how it looks in their drawings.
Well, it's that's what I'm looking at right now.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to get...
Yeah.
Okay, good point. Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I'm jumping back and forth between C24 and C25 right now. So you're right. I just want to make it clear that 2 feet would translate all the way down to the corner entrance being pushed back, just so it's universally understood that 2 feet is at the corner entrance as well. That 2 feet pushback.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
I think so.
I think the other thing that I just wanted to throw out there is that the commission, you know, this is the opportunity where the commission can respond to what the applicant proposed, and you've done that. But I would just say that this is also the time that you can make suggestions. And so if there are any suggestions, I think that those need to be, you know, fully aired right now, just so that the applicant can leave with really clear direction on what changes need to be made for November 12th.
So does anybody have any specific advice and suggestions for the applicant?
Well, I, in conjunction with setting back the storefronts on Flanders, the applicant had also suggested or proposed to thickening the mullions above the canopy. And I disagree with that notion. And we are keeping the storefront at 3.5 feet, and the treatment of the glazing above the canopy should remain the same as the original plan. That's
I totally agree with you, Zeri. I think that there needs to be a consistency on that podium.
Right.
That's what builds the tripartite language.
Right. Right.
Yeah, as I flip back and forth between 22 and 23, I agree with you, Zeri. Because that's what makes you understand that is a double height space.
Right.
Glazing right. at the ground and the glazing above the canopy are the same, and I think you lose that when you make it heavier. You're right.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah. I think I might be in the minority that, but I guess I'd like to find out that I don't believe that the cornice should come down because the reduced perception of the width is really imperceptible unless you're flipping back and forth between two slides. But the impact on the proportion is very real. And that cornice gets to be really too close to the same height as the body of the building. And there's like a weird business going on there. And I'm looking at, if you look at slide
C26.
I'm sure it's in other slides too, but.
Yeah, C26, we're looking at the east side, the northeast corner.
So that
right.
that top piece that is representative of the cornice really stops becoming a cornice and really just becomes more building body.
Yeah.
You mean going from 5 feet to 7 feet? Is that what you're talking about?
No, they've reduced the, see, you can't even tell. They've increased the number of floors in the white part of the building versus the gray.
Oh, that's right. The decrease. Yes. Yeah, sorry. One level decrease. Yeah. You know.
I'm good with their proposed preferred scheme. I mean, it does further, I think, articulate the building and emphasize the top a little more, which would be reinforcing the tripartite scheme. But it's pretty subtle. It could go either way. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference on the success of the project at all.
I'm in favor of the preferred scheme.
I'm going with the preferred scheme. I think that further articulation and the further refinement slims down the building. I know it's you know, once it's built, it's not, you're not going to have two buildings switch back and forth to tell you what the difference would have been. But on the flip side, I think it does further articulate, and I'm with Don on the it further emphasizes the tripartite scheme. So I'm with the preferred scheme on that one.
Yeah, so am I. I'm fine.
Are there any other issues outstanding? Or I don't think so.
Art, does that check all the boxes on in your
It does. I mean, that's, you know, so just in summary, you know, again, this is providing advice for the applicant to come back to you, but then to go back to City Council. And so I think just to kind of pull back for a second and think, like, are these changes the setting back of the upper kind of the upper masses a little bit and the extended canopies, you know, collectively, are those meeting the City Council comments?
I watched a couple as two times, as I said. I think the major the only commissioner that really quoted actual guidelines was Commissioner Fritz, and I think Commissioner Fritz's interpretation of some of the contextual guidelines was a little too narrow, and I think we have done a pretty ample job in a pretty exhaustive job in trying to in understanding how those guidelines in this particular case fit. And I think on balance, we all agreed previously, and I think we all agree now, that the building meets those guidelines. So from answering to Commissioner Fritz's major concerns, I think we have. And I think we probably just need to make sure that the findings are strongly rooted in some of the things that we've said and the guidelines for further review by council. In terms of the ground floor activation and pedestrian realm, I think it was, Commissioner Fritz also had some comments on that, but Commissioner Hardesty had some concerns also about the crowdedness and the confluence of multiple of all these activities together. But I think, you know, in if she reviews a little bit more of the 2035 plan as proposed, this is the results that we are wanting, is that level of activity on the ground floor. So I believe that we are answering our concerns by also what I'm looking for by basically articulating the way this building is working on the ground floor and how it interacts with the right of way and the public realm. I think the mayor was the one that talked a little bit about sculpting. I think we've done some further sculpting. I think it's subtle but effective. So I believe that we've answered that question also. And I think Commissioner Udaly, she was pretty adamant that the building met guidelines in the first place. So I don't think she had any concerns. Commissioner Ryan was new and is probably brushing up on this as one of his future duties as a commissioner. And I think he probably was not quite, I mean, followed the lead because he probably wasn't as prepared. I'm sure he'll be more prepared to look at this project as we are looking at it today. So I believe that we have answered the commissioners, the city council's issues.
I mean, is it necessary that we, you know, comment on each of their comments to say why we think that it meets the guidelines? Is that what would be useful to them going back in front of city council to you know, get a decision? Because when we're reviewing it based on the guidelines, and we've all seen this project many times, and so, you know, the comments that we're making on how it differs than it did before, and how that meets or does not meet the guidelines. So,
excuse me, but someone can you? Yeah, thank you.
I think the guidelines are subjective, and I don't think that mm-hmm. has been mentioned enough. And I think that maybe that should have been mentioned early and often. And I think that I think a lot of the comments that have come out tonight, you know, I think specifically getting into some of the character of the pedestrian realm and just the character of the Pearl District, that it's maybe not set back as much as people think. And just during the hearing, I was kind of jumping around just to see if I could get kind of examples of areas that do look like they're set back 5 feet. And it's more difficult to find examples of that than it is buildings that are at the property line. So, and the reason I say that is because in Commissioner Fritz's written response, she cites a number of her issues circle back around to the 3 foot setback not being sufficient. And I think Commissioner Molinard kind of pointed this out that maybe she wasn't aware that the storefront systems do open. And that's on two bays. I need to go back, but the approved drawings were on two of the bays. I think it was the bay that is the farthest to the east was the bay that didn't have an operational start and opening.
I have that open on my desktop if you need to see, but yes, yeah. You're right. It's the farthest to the east that does not have the accordion opening doors.
So it's just the one, not
yes,
because the plan we saw earlier only had the one operable. Okay, that does make a big difference, actually.
But the approved shows it in both bays, at the sort of lobby bay and the hotel lounge bay.
Because that's the majority of the facade, really, then, at that point. Okay.
Art, I have a little comment on the setbacks, you know, that was proposed by the applicant. If you look at the Historic Society up on the South Park blocks, they've got some of those really deep setbacks with big columns, and it's kind of a no man's area. You know, it doesn't really, nobody uses it unless you're going to sleep there or something. And it doesn't really help the public realm at all. In fact, it detracts from it. So you might reference that going before city council.
No, and I appreciate that. I mean, that's a really good point. I think setting that back, like it's the intention is good. The intention is to create a bigger space. And it's just, I think it was good to have that discussion that you don't want to, you know, do something with the right intentions and have it actually defeat what you're trying to do.
Art, just on your comment about the discretionary nature of the guidelines. I think it's important to note that is purposely so that there is a prescriptive path in the code, but this is the non-prescriptive side of it. So the idea is to create variety and create opportunities to interpret things. And that's what the commission is charged with, is to interpret the guidelines in order to create, you know, the vibrant city and dense vibrancy that we all want to live in.
Right. And I actually think I maybe misquoted. I think Commissioner Molinar made the point that that the guidelines are set up so that there are examples. This may be done. And so when it references like warehouse, it's not prescribing that, but it's suggesting that. And I think the other thing that that's been a little bit confusing to just nail down is that this happens to be a site that's very close to a historic district. That's one thing. However, the River District guidelines repeatedly talk about the historic character, like historic features of the Pearl District. Well, that's different. That's not a historic district. And so it's kind of differentiating and separating those two. And I think that throughout the different conversations, those two things have been blurred a little bit.
Right. Well, obviously you have some work to do, and we are coming back to revisit a final document, a final report and findings at a later date. Tim, is there anything else, or Art, anything else you need from us at this time?
I do have one comment for Art about what might be helpful for the applicants is, because what we've seen is sort of the SketchUp line drawing kind of 3Ds, that maybe an updated rendering would help when they go back to council, because you know, all of us in this room look at this stuff all day long, and it, things make sense to us, but when you render it and add some more color and things, it might be easier for folks on the council to, I don't know, understand the changes that were made. And I don't know that that's true, because I haven't seen like rendering next to rendering, but they might want to try it out. That's all. Sorry to interrupt. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. I think that's the reason why we phased these hearings the way we did, was this was really a chance to have a quick turnaround for higher level conceptual SketchUp-y drawings. And we'll go back and work with the team to develop a harder, more representative package of the changes based on the conversation today. So yeah, if we're done, Sam, Commissioner, you could adjourn this item. I have one thing I would like to talk to commissioners about for 1 minute once we close this.
Okay. Well, we'll adjourn this meeting then. Thank you very much for the applicant and the appellant for their clear information and their time today.
Cool. And we'll be returning on November 12th.
And we'll be returning on November 12th.
Thank you. Thanks, Art.
Thank you, Art.
So really quickly, Hillary and HRCIP, we scheduled what will probably be the easiest, shortest fifth hearing of October you'll ever experience. Laura just set an invite out for 4:30, October 29th, for a 5-minute item to review the letter, and then have a vote on that letter so that we could put your signatures on it for the HRCIP project.
Good idea.
I had it on my calendar as a placeholder.
Yes, thank you, Zeri. And yes. I whiffed it. I think I missed some of those discussions and didn't nail it down until Hillary browbeat me with emails during this hearing and reminded me. So I just wanted to make sure you were tracking it. So maybe it's just me.
I work for me.
Okay. Yeah. Laura just said I'd invite. It's at 4:30, so, and it will be quick. That's why it's late. And like I said before, we're going to really try and do a better job of trying to do that. If we have extra hearings, schedule them at the end of the day as possible. Thank you for your extra time on this one. There's obviously a lot of issues. A lot of people care about this project. So I'm glad you guys stayed late. Yep.
Approving that letter cannot be done by just emails. Voting has to be legally required.
Right, because we're going to have you in the room at the same time. So it's a meeting. We have to have a public meeting about it. So we'll quick items of interest. And hopefully it's not too much of an inconvenience, Commissioner. Okay. And we'll be in and out.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
Yes.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Good job, Sam.
Good job, Sam.
Like, yes. Where are you? Where are you? I'm working. Just leave me alone. Awesome. A beautiful cheesecake is waiting for me at home.
Go get it, Sam.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thanks, Laura, for juggling all that. That was a lot of early in the hearing testifier links and all that stuff. I don't know how you do it.
No worry. Yep. No worry. Yeah.
Did you get your fifth monitor yet?
Working on it.
Cool. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a good evening.
Thank you.